Cara, just a moment, Christina. Just see if Cara would like to respond in any way to Pat's comments at this stage.
I save the responses for the 30-minute discussion.
Yes, you're okay to do that?
Yeah, I'm fine doing that.
Great. I'd like to welcome Christine Robinson to the podium. Make sure you can get around there. Christine is the current board member of the FASB.
Well, good morning. It's nice to be with you all this morning. And Cara, thank you for your research. It was very interesting to read. And I'm looking forward to sharing some perspectives with you today with my standard setter's hat on, not my academic hat on. So I'm going to share with you my perspectives on standard precision from that perspective of a standard setter. I'm going to not be quite as precise as Pat was. While I appreciate, I think the importance of the terminology of standard precision, just for ease of discussion, I am going to use the words rules-based and principles-based in my comments. But certainly, I think we do need to be careful and always remember that when we're using the word rules-based or principles-based, it's a continuum. Very often, a standard will have an overarching sort of more theoretical statement of what's trying to be achieved by that standard, but then there'll be more specific implementation guidance, and so it's very often a combination of the two. Okay, so the general finding of academic research, and I just want to make sure those are advancing, good. The general finding of academic research in this area is that rules tend to yield more and not less earnings management. And I think Cara did a nice job at the beginning talking about how that kind of goes against the conventional wisdom that more precise rules help curb earnings management. And I think that's an excellent example of why academic research is so important to standard setters, because often anecdotally we see activity going on, we draw conclusions from that, it establishes some conventional wisdom that may not hold up to analysis in large sample settings. And so academic research is very helpful for standard setters to kind of level set an understanding of the way that the world works more broadly. Now, if it were the case that there was a unidirectional effect between standard precision and the nature of standards, then I, as a standard setter, could take that into consideration, right? I could say, well, all else equal, if I'm trying to decide whether to provide more structure in more rules versus be more or less precise in my standard setting, I'm going to worry about how that's going to impact the manager when they apply these standards, and if it's going to lead to more or less earnings management, I might take that into consideration as one of the factors that I'm going to think about as I'm setting standards. I think what this paper is arguing is that, well, it's not a unidirectional effect, that it's more complicated than that, and there may be manager-specific factors that come into play. And so if that is the case, well, then it, of course, becomes much more complicated from a standard setter perspective to take that into consideration. But nevertheless, as a standard setter, I need to be aware that those complexities exist and how they might be operating in the environment. So I think this is just a really good example of why academic research is very important to standard setting activity. Now, in the paper, the authors note that some believe, and this is a quote, not a quote from you per se, but from sort of just discussion that's out there about standard precision, that the precise criteria of rules-based standards are intended to remove judgment from the classification process and improve comparability between firms. But I think it's very important when we think about the issue of comparability that we also not confuse it with uniformity. And that is a very easy thing to confuse, comparability and uniformity, because improved comparability is a very good thing when it comes to financial reporting, but just greater uniformity is not. The ISB and the FASB conceptual frameworks are very careful to make the difference between comparability and uniformity as clear as possible, and also to emphasize the importance of comparability over uniformity. Both frameworks state that comparability is achieved when similar economic phenomena are reported similarly, okay? But when uniformity is what we get when we have different economic phenomena that are reported similarly. So comparability is distinct from uniformity, and unfortunately, as I said, very often these two are confused. I would argue that in general, rules-based standards are better equipped for increasing uniformity, not comparability, and principles-based standards, all else equal, are better equipped to improve comparability. But standards setters, you know, we focus not just on the benefits of the standards, but we also have to focus on the cost of implementing those standards. And rules-based standards tend to be less costly to implement and monitor than principles-based standards. So as with most things in life, I think it's often the case that we get what we pay for. Principles-based standards may have greater potential to produce higher quality, more comparable information, but that comes at a cost in terms of a greater cost to prepare, audit, and regulate the information, and it may subject entities to greater legal exposure. So what's a standard setter to do, right? To rule or not to rule, that's really the question that we're often faced with. And as noted in the paper, the answer to this question varies across standard setting regimes, and it also varies within standard setting regimes, often because of differential trade-offs between cost and benefit. So if we think about the footprint that IFRS standards and US GAAP standards are covering, it's a fundamentally different footprint. IFRS standards are required to be applied by domestic public companies in all of the countries that you see shaded in blue on this slide. Whereas US GAAP, of course, is required for domestic public companies only in the United States. As a result, the general environment in which IFRS standards and US GAAP standards are applied is very different. The U.S. GAAP environment is characterized by some of the highest audit costs, regulatory enforcement costs, and legal exposures in the world. And while there's plenty of diversity within U.S. capital markets with respect to economic phenomena, even similar things being actually quite different, there is significantly, I would argue, more diversity in economics across the 140-plus jurisdictions that IFRS standards are required to be applied. So I think that combination of lower cost and need for flexibility to capture more diverse economics across many different sorts of environments would be expected to manifest in a greater tendency towards more principles in IFRS land and potentially more specificity in US GAAP standards. That said, though, even within those regimes, the ISB and the FASB will grapple with that trade-off between cost and benefit on a standard-by-standard basis as well. When the economics of a phenomena that a standard is trying to address is similar, then whether the cost is high or low of implementation, or sorry, if the cost is high or low, well, then you might expect to see more of a rules-based standard because there's not much benefit to providing a principle because there's not a lot of diversity in the economics that you're trying to provide flexibility to capture. But when the economics of the phenomenon is diverse, and the costs are sufficiently low, well then you'd say, okay, well now I'm going to lean more towards providing a principle in order to allow that economic diversity to come through in the accounting. I think where things get really tricky is when we're in that quadrant at the bottom there, where there is both a high potential benefit to providing more of a principles type of guidance, but at the same time, the cost associated with implementing principles is very high. And I would argue that this is the situation that we find ourselves in when it comes to subsequent accounting for goodwill. We have an environment where whether or not goodwill is in fact an asset and the longevity of that asset or the period of time over which it will waste is very situation specific. So we have a lot of diversity in economics, but it is also an environment in which implementing a principles-based standard is very costly because of the judgments that are involved in applying that guidance. So I think it's not surprising that we struggle. Standard setters have and continue to struggle with writing guidance for accounting for goodwill. So, perfect. I'm going to draw my comments to a close just by noting that the world is, in fact, a complex place. Relevant research is very helpful to us as standard setters in helping us to better understand those complexities and set better standards. And if you happen to have a paper on a topic that you think would be of interest to the FASB, then I would encourage you to go to the academic landing page on our website. You can either get there through the quick links on our homepage, or you can get there directly just by navigating using the web address /academics. And there you're going to find a number of materials that I think will be useful to you, both in the conduct of your research and also in teaching. But if you're interested in submitting a paper to us, you can just go to the box, and I don't know if those are big enough for you to read or not, but there's a box that says, how can academics participate or submit a paper? So you just click on that, and it will take you to an email address. You can attach your paper, and it gets sent directly to our academic fellow, our postdoc, who will take it from there. They'll make sure that it finds its way to the appropriate project team. They'll make sure that the project team understands your paper. They'll meet with them to discuss the paper, and then they'll gather any feedback from the project team and also any feedback that they may have, and they'll share that back with you. Which brings me to our postdoc fellow position. I always want to take advantage of some time to give some advertising to this position. It was introduced in 2018. Our first postdoc fellow was Kirk Gee from Stanford University. He took a job at Penn State University when he graduated, but Mary Barth and her colleagues very graciously supported him in coming to us, and then Penn State supported his decision to take an immediate year leave of absence from his new role and come to the FASB. When Kirk completed his year and moved on to Penn State, then our next postdoc fellow started, Mike Durney. He came to us from Cornell, he's Bob Libby's student, and took a position at the University of Iowa. They also graciously agreed to give him an immediate year leave of absence, and so he's with us now through to the end of June of 2020. During their year at the FASB, postdoc fellows engage in project-specific activities, so they're actually members of project teams. They also act as a liaison with the academic community, and they also work to improve our use of academic research and standard setting. So we offer a salary that's commensurate with a 9-month salary offered at top research institutions, a moving allowance and benefits, so it's not like there's a financial cost to making this decision. And I think there is a huge benefit to those postdocs that do come and join us for a year. If you have anybody that you think would be interested in this position, or if you yourself is interested in this position, please speak to me. Feel free to reach out to Mike Durney or visit with us in Miami, because we'll be there providing information about the program in, I guess that's December, coming up soon. All right, and that's it.
Thank you.